drawing room
over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. For decades, the Venice Biennale has seen Australia's top artists given a chance to present their work on the world stage. But it turns out that our history with the festival stretches back to its earliest years in the late 19th century. Kerry Gardner is a documentary filmmaker, the chair of Australia at the Venice Biennale and the author of a new book, Australia and the Venice Biennale, and also my guest in the drawing room. Welcome.
Thanks, Patricia.
So let's start with context. What's the role of the Venice Biennale? Why does Australia's involvement matter?
Well, the Venice Biennale started in 1897, and it's always been there to showcase in the beautiful gardens next to the Grand Canal in Venice, contemporary art. So we don't think of 1897 as being a time of contemporary art, but all art is contemporary when it's created. So we have 30-odd pavilions that exist in the Giardini or the gardens, and every 2 years, art lovers from all over the world and curators and thinkers and writers and scholars come together to see the offerings of all of those countries that participate, with a sort of reflection of how artists see the world at that point in time.
Take us for a walk around the grounds. What are we likely to see?
Well, when you arrive in Venice, which you either come by boat, you always come by boat, of course, from the airport, the whole of Venice embraces the Venice Biennale. So whilst the pavilions are down one end of the town in the gardens, the whole town embraces it. And so on the Grand Canal, in the small canals, in the hotels, in the shops, Venetians love the Venice Biennale, and it's the one time of year that they seem to really love having mass visitors, because those visitors stay for a long time. They're quality visitors. They spend money in the city. They'll stay anywhere between 2 days and 7 days, and they're there to see the world's greatest contemporary art. So it's not just in the official pavilions in the gardens, and it's not just in the Arsenale, which was the old weapons manufacturing area, huge, enormous warehouses in the centre of Venice that you will see art from all over the world, whether it's film or installation or paintings or sculpture or even performance art. But it's really all over the city in the restaurants and the bars. And you'll see really fun things on going down the Grand Canal. You'll see nude sculptures suddenly appear on the outside of hotels. And, of course, Venice is always best seen by water. So as you're going up and down the canal in the local water taxis and the local boats, you feel very encompassed by the Venice Biennale.
So what's it like being on the ground? Is it a lot of art galleries? Is it sort of a party feeling somewhere in between?
The feeling in Venice for the Venice Biennale is supercharged, I have to say. You always feel like you're rushing from one end of Venice to the other, and, of course, everybody gets lost in Venice, even Venetians. So if you're trying to get to point A or point B or between the two at a certain point in time, you're guaranteed that you'll be late, because when you're stressed and rushed in Venice, you get lost. Even when you're not stressed and rushed in Venice, you get lost. So there's that element of knowing that if you take one wrong turn, you are definitely going to be late. So that creates a kind of tension or energy anyway. But then there's just the fact that there's so much to see. So you move around the gardens or the Giardini from pavilion to pavilion, and, of course, some of those pavilions, the word gets around and there's queues. Goodness knows what it'll be like during COVID, but there's queues every year for popular pavilions, and popular pavilions are different every time there's a Biennale. Australia is always quite popular, I think, because we come from so far, and we do have a reputation of having quality showings. And, of course, we have our beautiful new Pavilion, which was built in 2015. It's the only new building in the whole of Venice in the 21st century.
Take us back to the early Australian artists that were involved. They exhibited as part of the Great Britain Entry. Was their work seen as British or as Australian?
Well, we only uncovered this fact in the course of doing the research. So 6 months even ago, I didn't know, and the greatest art historians in Australia didn't know, that in fact the first Australian to exhibit at Venice was the second Biennale ever in 1897. And he was a little-known artist called Grosvenor Thomas, an Australian-born man and artist and curator living in Scotland. He seems to have been the linchpin that brought together the Australians living in London and Paris to exhibit at Venice. He had quite a lot of power. His work was not only hung in the British Pavilion, but he curated the British Pavilion. And so it seems that he befriended this group of Australians in London because he was Australian and encouraged them to exhibit and obviously had the power to be able to get them hung in the British Pavilion. In 1912, we had a record number. We had 7 Australians hung in the British Pavilion. And what was very significant about 1912 is that the first Australian woman was hung, and that, of course, was the wonderful Thea Proctor.
Look, our first unofficial entry as a country saw Sidney Nolan selecting the works to include. Who did he bring with him, and what was the art we were kind of trying to present to the world at that point?
Well, of course, we thought we knew that the beginnings of Australia at the Venice Biennale was in 1954. It was low-hanging fruit for the Australian government, who'd been very reluctant to send artists to Venice. They saw it as a risk. They saw it as sort of frivolous and unnecessary. It has to be said that the Menzies government didn't really understand contemporary art and probably didn't want to. But Nolan, Dobell and Drysdale were all participating in an important show in London in 1953, the Burlington Show. And so the Art Gallery Directors Association of Australia put pressure on the Prime Minister's department and said, look, the works were already in London. It's hardly going to cost you anything. Nolan will head it up. He'll choose the paintings with us. And, you know, there's never going to be a better opportunity for Australia to participate at Venice. Of course, we didn't have a pavilion. It was many, many years before we had our own pavilion in 1988. But Nolan, Drysdale and Dobell all took around about 10 or 12 paintings each, and they participated in the central pavilion of the Giardini. So the central pavilion is devoted to artists from anywhere in the world, and there is a central curator of any nationality. There's a La Biennale curator that authorises and oversees the selection of those works. So that was our first really official entry, but it has to be said that the British Council of the Arts gave a great deal of help for that exhibition to be staged rather than Australia.
Australia's first formal exhibition was a few years later in 1958, but that wasn't a successful entry, was it?
No, 1958... We look back now and we can just see that it was a reflection of how Australia saw itself and our lack of confidence in the area of contemporary art and indeed being represented internationally. So Arthur Streeton was chosen to represent Australia with Arthur Boyd, so the Arthurs. Unfortunately, the works that were chosen were pretty entirely inappropriate for a 1958 exhibition. The beautiful work, no doubt it was beautiful, but it was painted in 1891, Fires On, by Arthur Streeton. I mean, Streeton by 1958 had been dead for 15 years. This exhibition, of course, in Venice is for living artists, living contemporary artists. So the fact that he showed a work from 1891 another from 1914 and another from 1895, didn't go down very well with the world's art elite, and really we became a bit of a laughing stock.
So why was there a 20-year gap until our next exhibition?
Well, I think it was largely due to this sort of cringe of what inappropriate work we'd sent in 1958, and the backlash and the sensitivity from the Prime Minister's department was such that they thought, well, if you're going to criticise us and what we did in 1958, well, we're not going to bother spending money on that again. So there was, in fact, a 20-year gap from 1958 to 1978 where we didn't send any artists at all officially. Now, there was probably artists that went unofficially and may have exhibited in private venues, but officially it wasn't until 1978 that we went back with three artists, all quite radical: John Davis, Ken Unsworth, and Robert Owen.
On RN, I'm Patricia Carvelis. Kerry Gardner is my guest in the drawing room. We're talking about Australian art and the Venice Biennale. When we decided to get involved again in 1978, what had changed? How had our approach to the exhibition shifted?
In 1978, we had a visionary commissioner, a man called Daniel Thomas, really the godfather of contemporary art history in this country, a wonderful man who lives in remote Tasmania these days and still writes regularly on contemporary art. And so it was largely up to people like Daniel Thomas and the art gallery directors at the NGV and the Art Gallery of New South Wales that pushed and pushed right through the 60s and 70s and said, Australia must be represented at the world's greatest contemporary art exhibition, the Venice Biennale. So it was due to the tenacity of those art gallery directors right across Australia, but especially the NGV and the Art Gallery of New South Wales, that they finally got three artists through. And they exhibited again in the central pavilion in the Giardini, or the gardens of the Venice Biennale, and they did quite radical work with wire and performance art and installation art and the very famous Ken Unsworth untitled stone piece that many people will know from the NGA and the Art Gallery of New South Wales. And of course, the nude performance piece by Ken Unsworth, which caused a scandal and I believe was shut down for a short period. But Venice has always got scandals. Every year there's a scandal of some kind or other.
Yeah, there's a scandal's a good thing, like to be involved in so much as, I don't know, everyone starts talking about you.
If nobody's being hurt and it's all in the name of art, I think it's part of Venice.
So did our return to Venice represent a broader shift in the way Australia's art bodies and the federal government viewed the role of Australian art in the world, or was Venice a singular decision?
I think by the time we got into the late 70s and the 80s, we had enough scholarship and understanding in curatorial circles and in gallery circles. We'd matured. We understood that Australian artists had a lot to say and had a lot to give. And really from 1978 onwards, there was a commitment to send artists and to choose carefully and thoughtfully the artists that we did send. You know, we became increasingly able to have political artwork. In 1980, Tony Colling wanted to protest against testing in the Pacific, and so he sold yellow cake. And I believe the pavilion was shut down for that because, of course, you can't sell food in an art exhibition. It's against health laws. But we developed a much more mature and cosmopolitan and outward-looking approach. And once that horse had bolted and we went in 78, it was almost like there was no stopping Australia. We thought the first woman to exhibit for Australia was 1982, Rosalie Gascoigne, but as I found out when I was doing my book research, it was actually 70 years earlier, and it was Thea Proctor. We took off then and had some of our most famous artists like Peter Booth and Imanz Tillers. And then, of course, the excitement of being able to fund in collaboration with the Australian government our beautiful Philip Cox Pavilion, our idiosyncratic and very Australian first pavilion, was erected in 1988 and designed by Philip Cox.
The artists chosen to represent our country, what does it say about us? There was a 70-year gap between female artists. It took some time for Indigenous artists to be included. It really tells the story, doesn't it, of our own struggle to be genuinely inclusive and equal.
It's certainly a mirror that we can look into, and we will see reflected back sexism and racism, and a certain lack of understanding of global contemporary art. But by the time we got to 1990, we'd already had our first woman. In 1982, we finally had our first Indigenous artists in 1990 with Rover Thomas and Trevor Nicol. However, of course, contemporary Indigenous art had really not been around that long at that stage, but the Visionary Art Gallery of Western Australia were the hosting institution and the commissioner of that very groundbreaking exhibition. A lot of Australians would be familiar with Rover Thomas's work, perhaps not so much with Trevor Nicol's work. Very brightly coloured, very contemporary and very graphically striking work. And one of the great joys of doing the book research was finding a wonderful portrait by an unknown photographer of Trevor Nicol's and Rover Thomas standing on a very elaborate small bridge over a small canal in Venice, and to see these two proud Aboriginal men standing side by side, looking very bemused at being in such an elaborate and ancient city. Just one of the joys of researching the book.
What makes for a successful Venice show? Is it about the individual artist? Are we telling a story about ourselves as a country? What should a show accomplish?
My view, my personal opinion is I don't want to see a nationalistic show. I think showing a diversity of artists over a number of years is very important. I think when you sit down and you look at the book and you see all of the different materials, all of the different approaches, we go from installation artists and performance pieces to sculptors, painters, video artists, multidisciplinary artists, beautiful photography by Bill Henson, beautiful large-scale Indigenous works by Emily Nawari. I don't think there's an answer or the right answer. I think there'll always be people who like or don't like the choice of artist, but I think what we can say these days is the choice of artist is made in a very democratic way. Since 2019, we have an open expression of interest, so any Australian artist can apply to represent our country at the Venice Biennale. And I think that's wonderful, and I think that opens up the whole landscape of Australian art to any artist. I think that's a very hopeful thing.
You mentioned COVID before. What impact has that had on the Biennale? Is it just a brief interruption, or do you think it marks a change in the festival?
No, I think it's a brief interruption. When I look back at the history and I looked into the La Biennale archives in Venice and also the British archives, since 1897, there's been other interruptions. There was a long interruption for the First World War, for the Second World War. The student uprising in 1969 closed down the Biennale. All of those things are part of the rich history of Venice. I think COVID will be seen in the same way in the history books. At the moment, the Architecture Biennale is on and people are visiting the Venice Biennale of Architecture at the moment.
So I think that's optimistic and hopeful. And we hope that next April 2022, that we'll be opening the beautiful Australian Pavilion on the banks of the beautiful canal in the gardens, and that we'll be showing Marco Fusinato for the opening of next year's Venice Biennale. But who knows?
That's right. We aren't sure about much anymore. Kerry, thank you so much.
Thank you, Patricia.
Kerry Gardner has been my guest in the drawing room, and her book, Australia and the Venice Biennale, is out now. That's all for RN Drive tonight. But before I go, do you want to hang out with and learn from the ABC's best broadcasters and journalists for a 2-week media residency at the end of the year? ABC Top 5 Media Residencies are open to both academics and professionals working across science, the humanities and the arts. The application closing date has been recently extended and is now closing just before the stroke of midnight on Sunday, June 6. So head to abc.net.au/top5 for more info and to apply. And I urge you to do it. It is a great, great experience.